Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, after a long holiday weekend, and what a weekend it was. I think out of all the stories of last week, I think the biggest story is ISIS dropping two bombs on Israel on the 3rd. No damage done, but certainly going to create even more tension in what's already an extremely tense situation. I think that I think it's time that this administration steps up and goes out and kicks ass. I mean, I don't know what we're going to wait for. Are we going to wait for some major tragedy? Are we going to wait until they actually kill 1,000 people or 10,000 people? I mean, you know, it's time. I mean, this ISIS is out of control, and they need to be wiped off the face of the map. That's it. There's not much to say about it. They are bad. They are looking for trouble, and they have the desire to blow up the world, because they want to go to a better place in their mind. And I think that that's something that needs to be addressed. I think it needs to be addressed now. And let's hope that our chief, commander-in-chief, has the stones to take care of business now, instead of sitting back and waiting until we have a repeat of the World Trade Center, until we have a repeat of something here. I mean, you know, it's time, okay? I mean, there's no other way to put it. You know, this is the land of the free and the home of the brave. And to remain that way, we cannot be passive any longer. It's time to step it up. And of course, you know, I just find it to be chilling that we, you know, there's really been no major reaction. And, you know, again, it's yes, there was no damage and there was no deaths. But, you know, it's only a matter of time, right, before these crazy loons do something really that's going to cause trouble. Let's not, you know, forget the issue. Let's keep our eye on the ball. You know, maybe if we spent as much time on ISIS as we do on Greece, which has got the GDP of Indiana, you know, we would get something done. I mean, you know, Greece is still the headline story. And the truth of the matter is, do you really care? Okay. Does Greece have an effect on the day-to-day living of the world, but especially of Americans? And I would say the answer is no. Okay, are we going to continue? Greece is going on an anniversary of 5 years on and off of the front page with their default. Let them go. Let them have some more drachma. Okay, that's where they belong. They want more entitlements. Let them take care of it themselves, and let the Eurozone out of it. I don't see the issue, the problem of trying to continue in on, you know, what they're trying to do. I think it's, in my eyes, it's a total crock, and it means nothing in the big scheme of the markets. It could be the reason that the markets may sell off. Okay, I mean, and then of course we had basically an abominable jobs number on Thursday. You know, they came out with 228,000, but looking inside the number, wages, a minuscule increase, largest decline in participation since 1977 now. So it's great. We continue to get worse, and yet we celebrate the perverse world of Wall Street. Is good news, or is bad news still going to be good news? And of course, is that not a perverse way to look at it? Of course, people are just giving up, and as we continue to mask the problems, our Federal Reserve got the biggest gift ever. They've now got Greece on the front page. They've got the bombing in Israel and a lousy jobs number. So the question of when are you going to raise rates will be put to the back burner. And, you know, is that something that we need to address? And, of course, unfortunately, at this point in time, I think they've missed their window of opportunity to raise rates because they want to continue to day trade the stock market so that they can benefit the few. You know, I always thought that this country was based on helping the masses, not the few. But of course, when you deal with people that have no common sense and that only know the way to run an economy, which is from a textbook, we know that that only leads to disaster. And for those of you who think this time is different, you better think again, because it is never different. Markets themselves repeat the same ridiculous process over and over again because we believe that this time is different and the issues are not important. So if you think that it's not important that we're going to have probably another abysmal earnings season, if you think it's not important that companies, large companies, continue to be able to buy back stock at discounted rates, if you think that we have a situation that the middle class is basically being eliminated, okay, if you're happy with all that, then of course stay the status quo. But if you're not, then it's really time on this Independence Day weekend for Americans to step up to take care of America. I mean, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of watching the administration that we have. And again, you can take both sides of the aisle. I mean, just the boob that's in there now, you know, continues to say how wonderful he has done, what a great job he has done rebuilding America. And yes, he's done a great job in rebuilding us into a bigger version of Greece, making everybody dependent on public aid, entitlements, food stamps, okay, creating an army of Democrats that are going to continue to vote because they get the entitlements, because they get the free cell phone, okay? Now, if you are happy with that, then again, so be it. But I'm certainly not happy with it, and I don't get it, and I don't understand how this great country of ours can stand back any longer and watch people that are in charge ruin the country, ruin the America that I love, you know, the home of the free, the land of the free and the home of the brave. Okay, I just don't get it how we can sit idly by while our guy and all of them, again, this is not a political statement for one side or the other. They're all a bunch of phonies that have one interest in mind, and that is lining their own pockets. And I just don't understand how we can watch the destruction of America. To me, it's just a sad state of affairs what we've built ourselves into, and we need to do something, and we need to do it now for the economy, against ISIS, against it all. But of course, I'm sure that our current leader will sit idly by, more importantly, bragging about what a great job that he has done. But that is my editorial for this Independence Weekend. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. We have just so many great articles and so many great features for you. Check it out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with our friend Jane King. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Stay with me now. Listen up.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz, and as we always have our friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report, and we never give her a Twitter handle, at Market Jane. You got to check her out. She's my friend, and she is really knowledgeable, and I got a lot of good questions for her today. What's up, Jane King?
Oh, I'm just very much looking forward to a nice Independence Day weekend with family, staying in New York. Weather's going to be great, and looking for a little R&R this weekend.
All right, so as you get your R&R, I got a couple of key things that we needed to talk about. Number one, Greece. Is there a resolution? Does it matter? And do you care?
Well, I do care because this week has been nothing but grief all week, and I've been drawn into this drama, whether it impacts my investments or not. I'm going to be watching Sunday to see how the vote goes. Of course, mixed messages all week. Monday, we came into work, and the markets were selling off Sunday because of this referendum. And then it looked promising, and then we hear different things from Tsipras, and we hear different things from the finance minister. I think they're going to vote for the bailout program and for increased austerity on Sunday. But we'll see. I wouldn't bet the farm on that.
I think you can wave goodbye to Greece. I think they will be back to the drachma. So buy some paper for printing currency, because that's what they'll be printing from now on forward, I think. I think this is working out perfectly the way Chancellor Merkel would like to see it work out, and they can go on their merry way. And so speaking of betting the farm, this last week we had the USDA report, and of course, Bubba here has been saying that grains were too cheap all along anyways, and all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, corn, wheat, and soybeans went ballistic last Tuesday, and or Wednesday, yeah, Tuesday, and then Wednesday, they had a little bit of a sell-off, but I mean, pretty strong markets, and since you have ties to that part of the world as well, did you talk to your family about it, and did they have any reaction to what happened to the USDA report?
Well, the growing season started off almost perfect, and this was on the heels of a perfect one last year, and that's why we saw prices so low to begin with. But Indiana, and that's where my family has their farm, has gotten so much rain during the month of June. And that's really what's destroying crops. The Purdue agricultural economist friend of mine, Chris Hurt, says $475 million worth of crop losses in Indiana alone. The rain's really becoming an issue here. Now, we're going to be starting to head into pollination season here for corn. So we would see things dry out and get some really hot temperatures. That could cause corn prices to go up even more. August is a key month for soybeans, but the key time period for corn is coming up here very quickly.
Well, it's supposed to be knee-high by the 4th of July, right?
Well, that's probably a saying that started in the 1920s, because about 4th of July, it's about 6 or 7 feet tall now.
Okay, well, so there you go. And, I think one of the things that's interesting, and, I've been wrecking this in my brain, obviously I'm not a farmer, I'm a trader. And I'm a speculator, and I'm pretty good at reading markets and have been on top of this grain story the whole time. But I go, if farmers can figure out a way to grow more, then the price is not important, because it's just the cost of what it costs them to do it. And obviously costs have come down with technology, and they can actually produce more. So is there a sweet spot? Because obviously when prices get real high, that usually means there's a little bit of a shortage. And if you don't have any to sell, then it really doesn't matter how much you're selling it for, because you have none. And I know that your family is a little more conservative and smarter about the way they do business. But is there a sweet spot, a sweet number that they would really like to get that just makes them happy, as long as they get a good crop?
Well, I've actually never heard them say, but I'm just going to say about $5 corn probably is a nice profit. But not so high that it means there's a problem. Soybeans, maybe $9, maybe $8.50, something like that, I'm guessing, would be a nice little tidy profit for the farmers, but nothing panicky, nothing that would cause them to. I remember, what was it, like 2008, when we saw wheat $25 a bushel, and it was insane.
Remember that?
And the farmers I know were like, what in the world? This is ridiculous, you know. So, you know, even they know that that's not sustainable, and who sells it at that price anyway, except if you get really lucky. So I think if they could see steady prices around those numbers that I gave you, they would be very happy.
Okay, and then so now that we go, we see I've been all over the place today, so I'm bringing you into three different topics. So we saw that Facebook is changing their logo; they made a change in the A. But what's your take at Market Jane and also on Facebook, Jane King? But what is your take on the social media cycle, and is it a great benefit? Is it something that's really been something that we've needed? Do we need it? Is it really a great tool? What's your thoughts?
Oh, by the way, can you tell any difference at all in the Facebook logo? I mean, it's like more of a gentle tweak than it is a change. They say it's better for mobile, which is the way most of this stuff is going anyway. But I just thought that was almost kind of humorous. I'm looking at them side by side and can't quite figure out. And they probably spent, $3 million changing it. But anyway, personally, I love social media. I have kept in touch with people. The guy who rode the bus with me in third grade. I mean, I never would have talked to him ever again in my life, probably, unless I ran into him at some point. And now I know, his parents celebrated their wedding anniversary, and he's got a couple of kids. And I think it's fun. It's a little annoying sometimes, but overall, I think it's a great way to connect people and to stay informed. I will go on Twitter. I find Twitter, I kind of see them all different. Twitter to me is more like news-oriented. How can I find out information, read articles, links to different publications that I like? Facebook is more just social and keeping up with friends and showing pictures and sharing your trips. And LinkedIn is, for professional and kind of promoting yourself and what your expertise is. But the question is making money. I mean, Twitter CEO is gone. DeCostolo left. Jack Dorsey's coming back. He doesn't seem super excited about coming back to run Twitter. The question is how to monetize that. The eyeballs are there, certainly for Facebook. But do ads online really work? And there's this new book coming out by Michael Wolff, media writer, very smart guy. And the title of the book is Television is the New Television. And he basically comes full circle and makes this argument that there's still no better place to advertise, despite, Facebook and how many users they have. The question is, can they really make money advertising? Do we really look at those ads on Facebook, or are we just looking at pictures of all of our friends and the food that they're having? So he makes this, and he talks about how Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, some of these online sites are now moving into video and TV. So it's interesting. This the whole media story is not written yet, and it's going to be interesting to see where it all goes.
Well, but I mean, so, okay, you mentioned TV now. It's my understanding that many of the millennials, which would be the next generation, they don't even watch TV. In fact, most of them don't have, when they buy a new apartment or they rent a new apartment, they don't even buy a TV because they now, everybody subscribes basically to Netflix or a version of that. And those are without commercials. So where do the commercials come from? How do we monetize it now?
Well, I still think we're waiting to see. I actually asked my kids this, and they're 6 and 8. And I asked them about a month ago, what would you rather give up, your iPad or the TV? And my daughter immediately said the iPad. And my son said the TV, no the iPad, no the TV, no the iPad. They have the TV on all night. I mean, they're watching these Disney shows ad nauseum, by the way. And I just think we're a multi-screen world. I mean, I do not enjoy, and if you're getting together with your family, do you really sit around a laptop or an iPad and watch a show together and eat popcorn? I mean, I think there's room for all these things, and they're all going to work together somehow. And they kind of do, and we're going to see more of that in the future.
Okay, and I can see that. So, anything surprising coming on the Kaching Report? Anything that we can report here?
You know what? I haven't even put it together yet today, so I'm trying to remember what all I've collected on there.
That's all right. Hey, listen. You know, when you're busy,
you have to read it. It'll be good. It's a special July 4th edition. For nothing else, look at me in my red, white, and blue. It's a special edition.
I'll tell you what you got to do. You got to look at Jane King's website on Lila Max Media, because you watch her talking about eight boxes. It's really pretty cool and exciting. And you know,
you know what? It's creepy. Our IT guy was like, I really want to do that. That's kind of modern. It's like GIFs. And I was like, I looked at him and I was like, you like this? This seems really weird to me. And he's like, no, this is good. I was like, okay.
I love it. I love it. And I love Jane King. And I love watching her on TV. And I love talking to her. I love interviewing her. It's great to have you on. Jane King, you are awesome. Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report, and at Market Jane on Twitter. Make sure you follow her. Jane King, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out after the break. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
You said, Roy, you ain't listening to me.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and has become a ritual, my man Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com and a regular member of the Bubba Cast. So, Mr. McClone, what is going on? What are you thinking? I guess let's start with Greece. What the hell is going on with Greece?
Yeah, we wish we could not have to speak about Greece. I was enjoying, I don't know if I was enjoying it so much, scanning my headlines just this week, and like my Bloomberg headlines, and 6 out of 10 headlines, every one of them had the word Greece in there. So I think we're getting sick of hearing about this small country in Europe that probably really should have never been in the European Union in the first place. But I think the bottom line is they're going to come to terms. It's mutually beneficial for all the parties. It's just a question of when and how long. And it's kind of ironic. This last Monday, we had the worst case scenario. We said, oh, no, we're going to default. So the market got hammered. The Monday before, we said, oh, we're going to come to terms. So the market's busted off. So here we are, stuck in the middle and all kind of confused.
Do you actually think they're going to come to terms? I say they're going to default. I say they're out. I don't think they're going to be in. I think they're going to be out.
Well, I think that's true. It's a question of time, because it's one of, you know, as the famous commentator Dennis Gartman says, they're a serial defaulter. Don't expect this to change. I mean, in this country, sometimes it's considered patriotic to pay your taxes and do your share, do your share. But in that country, it's considered anathema to pay taxes. So I don't know if you're going to change that. But so, okay, so maybe it'll work out this time. At some point, I don't, you know, unless we have some excessively strong economic growth to pull them out of the hole, at some point, I don't think they're going to change the structure of not being able to pay their bills.
Well, I mean, it's a wonderful place to live, though. You can start working at 21 and retire at 22. So what's wrong with that? I mean, when 50% of your GDP goes to entitlement programs, I mean, that's a great thing. And especially when your GDP is the size of Indiana. So it's a good mix. I mean, again, you mentioned it. I mean, just go look in your closet and see if you can find some old drachma lying around, because you'll be using it again if you ever go there. So now, of course, China continues to be under heavy pressure. Now, again, we all forget. Well, you and I don't forget, but most forget that, you know, yes, we're hearing the headline that China's getting slammed and they're in corrective territory or bear market territory, but they are up, you know, only 100% from the beginning of the year. So it's not like the world's coming to an end there. But, of course, China's bank is also now kind of, I think, panicked or puked a little bit and felt that they needed to cut rates again there. What do you see in there?
Yeah, I think that's a key point. Let's point that into context. First, the Chinese equity markets have had a good pair. They've had a good roll. There's been pretty good signs of excessive risk taking. We all know that. But and they're still up quite a bit in the year, although they've corrected, you know, generally depends on which market. You look at 20% or so in the last couple of weeks. The key thing, I think, to point out is the Chinese central bank has cut rates for the third time this year. They just recently cut down to another 25 basis points. They got 2% on their bottom line base percent rate. They just relaxed margins, for stock positions and stuff. So they're doing what they can, but I think the key thing to remember is it's very rare for a central bank to cut rates because they want to. They're cutting rates because they have to. And this has been showing up that things we've talked about in a while in the global markets. Commodities have been getting hammered. Yields have been going down. And sometimes it's one thing to forget. Well, you know, you can hear what the analysts and the economists say, but what are the markets telling us? And the markets are telling us, just, and the Chinese are doing, the whole rest of the world, even what just happened recently, is the Swedish central bank just cut rates again. They're at negative 0.35%. So the rest of the world's fighting this deflationary trend, and we're virtually the only country in the world, the shining star, that's thinking about raising interest rates, which is a significant dichotomy. But I think the point to remember is the trend remains deflationary global. The rest of the world's fighting this deflationary trend and cutting rates, and generally these things don't turn on a dime. There's been a significant trend. It should last a while. It'd be wonderful if we can, you know, lift up the rest of the world, if we can start a rate hike policy and our economy can continue to expand and, you know, yields can go up and inflation will increase in this country. That, to me, is a wonderful situation. I remember in the 80s and the 90s when you and I were in the trading pits. I still think it's a dream.
Well, I think that everybody's dreaming, and I got news for you. I think that Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve is thrilled with the trouble in Greece, because it's actually taken the highlight or the spotlight off of them, because they have no intention of raising rates, in my opinion. And they, at this point, they still really can't raise rates, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't care what the numbers you're trying to show me. The country is in the economy is a mess.
Well, I think that this is a good one that you can, we can play a little difference and let our viewers, you know, hear the point counterpart. I think they want to raise rates, but I think they have no justification to do. I mean, they have some justification. The key point is there's just, you know, there's two key things for the Fed. They just said this recently in their statement. This is, they will raise rates if labor markets meet their expectations. And the other quote was from the recent statement is, and if inflation meets our target. Their target's 2%, and we're nowhere near that. And that's also, there's two ifs, yet the whole market's completely priced for this. I think they want to, and I think part of the reason is, and they've said this, the term they've used is they're worried about excessive speculation. So let's get back to the Chinese market a little bit. What the biggest risk, I think, for us and all of us and the Fed and the whole world now is a pretty sharp stock market correction. Meaning if the equity, let's say the S&P goes back to 1,500, that would be a problem. Hopefully that won't happen. But that's just where it was. That was the highs just a few years ago. And because it's gone up so far so fast. And that's what I think the Chinese authorities are worried about, too. You get a sharp equity correction, the market forgets about where it's been. It forgets about just what happened. And one good example was 1987. Everybody remembers that as the crash year in the U.S. But it's only because the market went up too much and then went down too fast. And by the way, the stock market end of the year, S&P 500, 1987, up 2%. But most people don't remember it that way.
Well, no. Okay, so let's talk about our difference, because we do have a major difference of opinion on the Fed, and I don't think they want to raise rates because they've had plenty of opportunities to raise rates, and they continue to change their statement on what data they're looking for. I mean, certainly if you listen to TV, the data out there has been phenomenal. So what data are they waiting for? Originally, it was a 6% unemployment, and they were going to raise rates. Well, now we're at 5.4% unemployment, and they still won't raise rates. Supposedly, we're having this tremendous growth now. Of course, I don't see it. I think that's a crock of crap, but they keep saying it. So, again, why is the Federal Reserve dictating and day trading the stock market when that is not at all in any part of their mandate? Or is in no part of their charter that says that they should be concerned about the stock market. So why are they so concerned whether the stock market goes down or not? Because they decide to raise rates and do what's really best for everybody.
Well, I mean, that's hard to answer that question, other than we both know if there's a sharp correction that'll impact the economy and the Fed has to be there to save us. And the problem is they can't cut rates like they've done the last few times when we had long bear markets because rates are at zero. But I think the point to remember is what's been the trend, and the trend is this reduction in Fed hike expectations. At the beginning of the year, most analysts said, oh, they're going to hike by June, and the Fed funds, you know, the futures market said, oh, we're going to have 50 basis points of hikes this year. Now we're into July, and everybody's saying September, so we keep kicking the can down the road, just like the debt negotiations, and the futures market are priced for less than 20 basis points of tightening this year. So historically, that would mean one tightening, so maybe it would be one and then done. But, you know, as far as that happened, I don't know. I think it's, you know, different between want to, and I think the Fed would love an environment where they can justify raising rates, but the problem is, like you said, it's not there. And one of the key things, yes, unemployment's supposed to be improving by the data, but there's just no signs of true signs of inflation. That's why you have to go back to the bond market. The bond market should always be the forward-looking indicator of inflation at 2.4% in a 10-year note. That leaves no room for a 2% inflation rate.
Well, so, you know, again, so I go back to saying that why does the Fed care about the stock market? We hear, wasn't it supposed to be oil? The lower cost of oil was going to stimulate all this new spending. It was like a major tax cut. I haven't seen that either. So, you know, you here on this show yourself said a couple of weeks ago, retail sales, the worst still bad since 2011. We just had the worst earnings quarter since 2009. But yet we keep hearing how great we're doing and how great the economy is. So where is the disconnect? I don't get it. Please tell me.
I agree. That's one thing. If you look at that's been one of the key things as an analyst I've really been concerned about is, first of all, in this country, we haven't had the real boost that we expected from the lower energy prices, but it's also really happening globally. A thing I watch a lot because of platinum and palladium is global vehicle sales, and they've been very disappointing. Global vehicle sales so far are running at an annual pace of 0.5%, and that is nowhere near indicative of the global economy running at 3%. You know, that's an annualized pace, and that's as of the latest data. Data for vehicle sales out of China is very low, despite the lower rates. So that's the problem. I agree, and that's, I agree with you. We're just not getting that organic demand pull forces that should create inflation for the Fed to have to raise rates. The problem is we've had this really historic, almost unprecedented rally in the stock market, and they said that. I think they're worried about that, and so they want to be ready for at least to save it if it corrects. But I'm just going by what they said. That's what they said. I mean, Yellen said that.
I understand.
She used was excessive risk-taking.
Listen, I get it. And I've heard the BS from Greenspan to Bernanke to Yellen. And in my mind, they're all full of it. And it's ridiculous already that, again, they're not supposed to be concerned about the day-to-day market action. It should have no matter and what they're doing, and the biggest percentage of the population is not even involved in the stock market. So that's another bunch of hokey stuff. But again, we all have opinions, and that's the way it is, and that's what actually makes a market, because you're on one side, I'm on the other, and it's no big deal. But this is the Bubba Show, and I'm with my man Mike McClone, ETFSecurities.com, a new sponsor of the Bubba Show. Make sure you see Mike's reports he writes. We do post them when he sends them, and really great stuff. He's really a smart guy, and we can agree to disagree on certain subjects, but that's, again, what I say makes a market. So this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out. My buddy, my friend, Mike McClone, ETFSecurities.com. And seriously, you got to check them out. Go to their website. There's a special link on the Bubba Show at thebubbashow.org. You can check them out. But a lot of great products, a lot of great stuff that ties to, you know, a lot of things. But really, I think specialists in the precious metals space and the metals markets. And, you know, Mike, I tell you, I want to talk about gold and silver a little bit. I think first off, gold, you know, last Monday when we had the overnight announcement and, of course, the equity markets were crumbling and gold really, really struggled. I mean, you know, it's down here at the lower end of its range and it's really struggling to get off a home base. Yet, you know, you had TV pundits saying, oh, and gold had a dramatic move overnight up $10. I go, $10. I mean, that's hardly, you know, a move in today's world. What is wrong with gold?
The major issue with gold is this dichotomy of the U.S. Federal Reserve tightening and expected to tighten while the rest of the world's in a deflationary trend. So I'll give you an example. Year to date, as of the end of June, the first half of the year, gold was down 1% in U.S. dollars. But in terms of the year, it was up 7.5%. So gold in U.S. dollars not doing so well, but the dollar's been so strong, obviously that's been an issue for gold. So this concept of the Fed tightening in a deflationary environment, yes, that's going to hurt gold, but I still looked at gold as very resilient. You know, over the first half of the year, the dollar index was up 6%, yet gold is still hanging in there. So I look at it as it's an alternative asset. We'd call that the liquid alt. You know, it's considered one of the most liquid alternatives out there. And I see that as, you know, at some point you should have some of that in your portfolio. If I am going to continue to make a good part of money in the primary asset classes, number one, for most people, it's your home. But number two, it's the equity market, you know, the liquid. And I lose a little money in gold, that's fine. But I want it there, and I need it there for protection for if, you know, or I should say not if, but when we have the next issue. The key thing about what happened last week was one of the biggest things that rallied was the bond market. U.S. bond market just popped up. It was up, you know, 20-year bonds were up almost 3%. Now, it's come back a little bit, but I think longer term is still good. One of the key things I've really been watching lately is silver. And silver's got some really unique things brewing that I'm bit to, and I'd like to discuss. I just don't really know what to make of them yet.
Well, please discuss them because I own a lot of silver, and I'm getting a little depressed, I'll tell you.
Well, okay, look at silver year to date. It's the only major metal, including copper and zinc and lead and all the precious metals, that ended the year without a loss. And I don't say a gain because it only ended up the entire, you know, first half of the year with a gain of 0.2%. It's running at $15.70. But the point is, virtually every other metal in the world is down. Industrial metal, silver is 55% industrial. And silver's hanging in there, and the reason is because it's become impressively resilient. It's been down so much from the highs, and most analysts view it as very cheap, cost of production and all that. But the key thing that's happening inside the market, I view, is very interesting. As you look at the futures market, you know, stuff you and I used to do a lot in the trading pits, open interest, I mean, just the total amount of contracts and futures has just reached an all-time new high. As this market, you know, for the last few years has essentially drifted lower, that means a lot of new shorts in the market. And it also indicates that the actual inventories at these the COMEX exchange has relative open interest is actually declining. So I think the market might be setting up for a very significant sharp rally. Now, it could continue to drift lower. I doubt if it crashes at such levels because it's really below the cost of production. But the indication to me is it's setting up a pretty sharp rally. The question is how sustainable it is. But just giving an example, last time this happened was actually, you know, when we open interest reached a new high, the market was rallying. This was near 20 in 2008, and the market crashed to 10. Now, that's because there's too many longs. But now, since the market is dropping and open interest is up, it's indicating new shorts. So what I see now is probably a market that's way off sides and has a potential for a sharp rally soon.
All right, so do me a favor. Explain for the listeners what open interest means and what is open interest.
Well, in the trading pits, if you buy a futures contract and you hold it, you keep it in your account and you don't sell it, that's one contract that's open. So open interest is just the number of futures contracts that are open and held in futures accounts. And so when the market goes up and open interest increase, that generally means new longs in the market. It's just kind of a standard futures rule. When the market goes down and open interest goes up, it means new shorts in the market. So that's what the indication is. Open interest means the amount of open positions on the silver is at an all-time high. We've never seen such high levels. As the market's drifted down the last few years, which indicates it's probably way, you know, way offsides on short positions. These are indications. It's never a guarantee. That's just the way it looks.
So, but if so, an open interest. So, if I buy one from you, is that one contract open interest or two?
Yeah, one open interest. We both have one offsetting. You have one. I have one.
So, does that make it one open or zero?
One open.
Okay. All right, so it's the initiator of the buy. Is that how it works? I mean, I want to make sure.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Okay, great. So you think, I mean, listen, I own a lot of silver, and obviously I'm extremely depressed that it's been going down and or staying stagnant. It feels like it's going down, so maybe because it's only staying stagnant. So we look for a move. Now, would this be what you would think might be a short covering move, or will this be a move that will actually sustain and start maybe a possible new uptrend?
Yes. You never know. You and I both know how it gets started. There's always an excuse. It could be both, but it could start with short covering. We'll have to see. But the answer is yes. I'm sorry. It's hard to really pin down exactly what could happen.
Okay.
We kind of try to look at something that looks like it's a little bit offside. It's right to move, and that looks like it is.
Well, I mean, and it's funny, you know, not that, you know, you do this anymore, but, you know, the grain markets have, you know, been down there, and they tried to compress them and push them down and push them down. And then finally, you know, they started to move up a little bit. And of course, last week that, you know, when they had the USDA report, they had blow off tops and were up substantially, which is something we could see, I think, in the silver and the precious metal space as well. I think that we've seen, Mike, that all of the metals have just really been either down or compressed and really with very little action, almost like they are comatose recently. What do you think?
Yeah, it is July. You mentioned grain markets. I watch them very closely. One thing we all know is rain makes grain. We had a lot of rain. We had short covering. People are worried about a bad crop. But what rain does is it really helps the subsoil moisture. And come, you know, this month and as we get to tasseling and everything, that moisture is going to really help. So generally, it's probably just a short covering rally because the overall thing about grain is just supply is excessive. Don't underestimate the productivity of the U.S. farmer. It's still kicking in. But in terms of silver, the big difference is you can just create grain and grow it, and, you know, prices go high, you just grow more, and you can get, you know, you better seeds. You get your triple stack from Monsanto for corn, and there's just so much good technology. But in silver, we've been mining silver since, you know, antiquity, and there's only so much of it left. And the big issue now is supply is actually declining because scrap silver, there's no incentive to bring scrap silver on because prices are so low, and demand's increasing because prices are so low. So that's really unsustainable. At some point, price has to adjust. It's just a question of when and from what level.
So do we need the Hunt brothers to come back in and try to force up the silver market? Is that...
Well, I hope not, but, you know, we'll see what happens at this $15 area. It's just looking rather cheap, a lot brewing. And the thing is, you and I, will, as analysts, I always look at something, and then it's always going to take a spark. I just don't know what that spark will be.
I certainly understand. And of course, you've got a number of great products, but tell us about the ones we should be probably looking in that you think everybody should own in their portfolio, because I think you're correct that we should all have some representation and some exposure to the precious metals. So, you know, you think that buying the glitter, which is one of your products, GLTR, or is it just buying a straight silver or just the straight gold ETF at this point? What would be your number one choice for yourself personally?
To me, the most defensible long-term buy and hold precious metals position is the basket of precious metals. Why buy just one when you can buy an index? And that's glitter. So that's one thing I most always recommend, and it's almost always a completely defensible from an investor standpoint, from a board of directors, because, you know, I'm talking about silver right now because I see a bit something brewing. It seems it's a little more tactical. You might do that in a shorter term, maybe overweight a little silver. But if you want to buy and hold and forget about it and put it away, glitter is, I think, the best way, because you get a diversified basket of precious metals. You have that exposure to industrial precious metals like platinum, palladium, silver. Yet you have that store of value in gold. To me, that's just always the best way to go, is buying the basket. It's more of an index. And like I mentioned, silver, yeah, I'm talking about it now because it's a good story. There's something brewing. But who knows? This might just last for a couple months, a year. Maybe glitter, maybe silver will double. Who knows? But it's just kind of a shorter-term story. Longer-term, Buy and hold the basket.
Well, I mean, and you are, listen, that's why you're the analyst. That's why you bring what you bring to the table. This has been my man, Mike McClone, ETFsecurities.com. You know, you got to go check out his stuff. Look, I'm telling you straight up, he's got, first of all, he does some of the greatest analyzing work around, puts together a great report when he gets them out. And he's giving you a straight story. Look, he's not telling you anything unusual. He's saying, look, you need to protect yourself at all ends. And instead of trying to just pick one, put yourself in more of the endowment model and be set up for everything so you can handle all these markets. But that will do it for today. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Hortz. We were fortunately joined by Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Let this old world just spin around.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.